Talking with TD. Talking with TD. Touchdown, Tennessee! The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Terrell Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Well, that's right. You are now talking with TP. I am your host, Teron Davenport. It's a great opportunity to talk shop and dig in. Obviously, the offseason and the NFL draft is going to be here before you know it, but one of the initial parts of it is the NFL Combine. So we're coming to you live from Indianapolis. On that, we got recent conversations with Rand Carthon, Brian Callahan. There's a lot to get into. We got Jordan Reed, NFL, ESPN, NFL draft analyst, insider, everything you want to say about him. We got him coming on, and obviously Run TMC with Chris Sanders. A lot to get into, man. And of course, we got David James over there pushing the buttons, making it happen.
Yes, sir.
That's right. So, yeah, man, I'm sitting here in the hallway at the convention center, just chilling out, man. And, you know, obviously, there's a lot to get into. So I think the best thing to do is to start off with the way this Titans team is going to approach this, right? And we got to talk to Rand Carthon. We got to talk to Brian Callahan. They got into some of the things about the depth at the offensive line, as well as the wide receiver position. And it's a great year for the Titans to be in the market for what they are, because both of those groups are really, really deep. It's funny, I was walking with a couple friends yesterday, and we were talking about this wide receiver group, and it's not quite as deep as the 96 receiver group, which is probably the best ever, right? You know, you got Terrell Owens going in the third round. You look at the front end of it, Marvin Harrison, Terry Glenn, Eddie Kinnison, Eric Mould, you know, who spent some time there with the Titans. But nevertheless, this group isn't the same as that, but it's very, very deep. And that's something that we know is great for the Titans. In fact, here's Rand Carthon talking about the depth at wide receiver, as well as the O-line, and how that can alter or impact their approach to this.
I think if you look at it strategically, it's about, you know, the value, right? So if you're sitting there and there's a receiver there, knowing that there's a deep O-line class, it's like, all right, where can we, you know, supplement this position, you know, later? So it's about playing those two parts off of each other, whether that's in free agency as well and the draft. So it's about trying to mix and match those two pieces.
So that's Rand right there. You notice what he said just about, you know, the value of both positions. He did say something that was interesting when I asked him about Olu Afashanu, and not specifically about Olu, but about Bill Callahan being the coach and how having a guy who is such an excellent developer of talent, how would that impact a Joe Alt versus Olu Afashanu? And, you know, he said that they want guys that can play now, you know, and obviously Olu can. I think Alt is better in that situation, but nevertheless, you know, either way, you're getting a really good prospect if you go that route. But also notice, he said the receiver position, and that's something that they clearly have to address. I know they had a really good meeting, from what I understand, with Keon Coleman, the receiver out of Florida State. And we'll definitely, you know, be talking to him. I have a story actually posting next week, you know, coming out of the combine. It's an all-access story, so stay tuned for that. But Keon Coleman is a guy that they met with and really liked. And, you know, I don't know that he'll be there at 38, but if he is, you know, or even at the top of that second round, I would imagine Rand and the crew, they're going to be running to the podium or to the phones to find a way to get him, because he's someone they really like. But obviously, you know, there's a lot of receivers in this class that they like, you know, so they'll have an abundance there. I think when you look at the O-line versus wide receiver, just dilemma, right? The debate. Brian Callahan had a really, really interesting quote when I asked him about looking at how going back to 2020 it was. Going back to that year, and it was actually 2021. Let me get my date straight. They all run together, but the Jamar Chase draft, and you know how they weighed Chase versus Penei Sewell. And here's Brian Callahan on that.
A big one. I think, you know, at the end of the day, the NFL is about scoring points, and having people that can score points is important. I would say that that situation and our situation are probably very different, both in the who those players are and where we are in our process. So, you know, we were going into year three, and, you know, Jamar Chase and Penei Sewell, I think, were kind of unanimously considered to be all-pro caliber players. They both lived up to that billing. And so it's a different set of players, different set of circumstances, but, you know, I'll always lean, when all things are equal, guys that can score touchdowns tend to make more of an impact.
So you already said, right, when it comes down to it, if all things are equal, you know, the guy that catches touchdowns are the ones that score touchdowns. Those are the ones that have the biggest impact. So that could be a clue into, you know, Malik Nabers versus Olu Fashanu or Roma Dunze, whatever. But it's a good thing to hear that. In the meantime, they do already have guys that, you know, have been able to catch touchdowns in college, right? And one of those guys is obviously Treylon Burks. And, you know, when you look at Treylon Burks and just, you know, what he brings to the table, obviously there's a lot to be desired. The health has been an issue. Consistency has been an issue. Rand Carthon seems to focus on the health and, pretty interesting group of receivers that he's working with. Here's Rand Carthon on Treylon Burks and the outlook going forward.
Well, I think the injury, you know, the injury thing, I mean, the concussion thing was a real deal. You know what I mean? I think we all saw that from the Pittsburgh game. And so those are the type of things you can't really prevent. But I do know that Treylon is off this offseason training with D-Hop and some other pros around the league, which I think would be good for him to see how other pros prepare and get ready for the season so he can add that to his game. I've seen a couple clips of him running routes and doing stuff, you know, in the offseason. And for him, it's an offseason where he's not trying to get healthy. You know, he can work on perfecting his craft as opposed to trying to get back to get help.
So right there, you know, the fact that Burks is working with pros, trying to continue to get a feel for how this league works, I think that's something really notable for him. We know that coming back from the offseason last year, you know, Burks got a chance to get into training camp and really, you know, show a bright future. But obviously the injury in Minnesota, you know, that kind of set him back and he never got back on course. But in year three, it's an ideal time for him, especially when you look at this situation, right? We know the Titans, they're going to come out of here with at least one, maybe even two receivers, you know, come out of the draft with that. But it's a really good opportunity for Treylon Burks to establish himself also. And look, man, you know, he's in year three. He's going to need to have a good year three, year four, because obviously, you know, the fifth-year option on a first-round pick, that number is going to be high. He's playing to get into that position to be able to, you know, have that secured. But first things first, he has to be healthy. He has to be that guy that will score touchdowns, which is something, as you heard Brian Callahan say, is really important. Now, the other thing that we have to look at is Derrick Henry. We know they didn't use the franchise tag on him. His contract set to expire. Henry, in his final game, you know, this past season, 153 yards. It was his biggest total, his best game statistically of the year. At 30 years old, he showed that he still has it. You know, he still has some of that mojo left. Second in the league in rushing, over 1,100. I think it was 1,167 rushing yards. So you have something that's still there. But is he a guy that the Titans will want to keep around? Well, that's the million-dollar question. And obviously they want to keep him around, but at what cost? And that's one of the things that Rand Carthon seemed to, you know, say, hey, they're in a good place to make whatever decision that they do make. He said that they are going to talk to Derrick Henry and his team when that time comes. I'm curious when it does come, because I think if he hits the market, you know, a team like the Ravens, I feel would be an ideal fit for him. But look, there's an abundance of running backs that's available. You got Josh Jacobs, you got Austin Eckler, you got Tony Pollard. You look at some of the other guys, right? Saquon Barkley, David, he may end up in Houston. You know what I mean? He goes to Houston, that's going to be a problem with that offense, because you got him. You got on a lower scale, Zach Moss, Devin Singletary. The running back market is saturated, but it's also one that a lot of people view as being devalued. And I asked Brian Callahan about that, you know, just with the understanding of Derrick Henry and what he brings to the table. Brian Callahan had a very interesting take. I didn't look at it this way, and it's almost like, you know, remixing the position into a different way from the days we had Corey Dillons and Curtis Martins and Freddie Taylors and those types, where they were just, that's the back, that's your running back group, and that's it. Obviously, Freddie Taylor, you know, spent a little bit of time with, his name slipped my mind, 33. I forget the running back. He was a Florida running back also, but nevertheless, you know, most of these guys, they were the feature backs. That's not something you see as much. And that's something that Callahan was getting to. Here's Brian Callahan on the running back position being devalued.
It's, you want guys that can carry the ball, you want guys that can protect, and you want guys that can be dynamic out of the backfield. Sometimes that's one player, sometimes that's three. I think what's happening is that's that division of labor has been divided up amongst that room. So you're getting two and three guys that are contributing more than maybe just one guy all the time. And so I don't think there's a devaluation of the running back position. I think the division of labor has been separated a little more. So that's probably the best way to say that. There's you have to have good backs. There's really no way around it. Obviously, there's a positional spending that goes with that, but to have good running backs, ones that can protect, ones that can win routes in the pass game, can catch, ones that are explosive, and then you got to have guys too that sometimes when you need 2 yards, they're going to pound for 2 yards and make it hard on a defense to tackle them. So I don't devalue the running back position. I know how valuable it is. You just have to have a lot of different types of them ultimately when you're building that room for your team.
When it was allowed, were you able to get in contact with Derek at all?
Yeah, it's I've reached out. I know J.O.'s reached out as well, but you know he's going through. He was at the Pro Bowl. I didn't want to bother him. There was a lot of stuff going on, the Super Bowl, but I think that there's a great relationship with him and the organization that I know that he's always going to have the Titans in his heart. So whatever that looks like moving forward, we'll keep working through it. But I know what he means to the city and to the team, and I'm looking forward to getting to know him.
So you heard it right there, right? You know, I think just coming out of that, obviously, the fact that, you know, he had reached out to Derrick Henry, and, you know, he understands Henry's importance to the city and what he means to the fans. You know, that's something that, look, they left the door open. I don't know for sure which way they're going to go, if they're going to bring him back or not. But I think when you look at Derrick Henry and just what he brought to the organization and what he has left, there is a lot to like. But what if they don't bring him back? What do the Titans do running back-wise? Obviously, you have Tajay Spears. You have Julius Chestnut, who said he's coming back and he's going to be better than ever. You have Hassan Haskins on the roster as well. But it is draft season, and obviously that's something that we got to look at for this Titans team. We talk about running backs. You guys know, you know, Jalen Wright, the home run hitting ability that he has is a guy that I like. You know that Ray Davis is a guy that I like. But, you know, Ray Davis is a bit older, but I think, you know, you look at the draft, and obviously you have to look at Jordan Brooks, you know, the running back out of Texas. I think he's someone that may be a little too rich for the Titans' blood, but, you know, he is probably the top back in this class. I mean, It's hard to say that I always say Jordan Brooks. You know, let me get that right. It's Jonathan Brooks. Jordan Brooks, he played linebacker at Texas Tech, and he's now with the Seahawks. But that's the first Brooks that comes to mind. But nevertheless, when you look at Jonathan Brooks, you know, this is a guy that, you know, had an outstanding 3 years at Texas. Last year was off to a good start. Then he had the injury, but he could do it all. So you have him. You got Blake Corum, you know, who does a really good job. And hopefully, you know, for the Titans' sake, this ability won't have to come into play too much. And when I say really good job and the ability, I'm talking about how he could, you know, do a lot with a little bit of space in the backfield, right? You know, when there's penetration, et cetera. You got him, but those are going to require higher picks. I think when you look at this draft, right, and losing a guy like Derrick Henry is something that, you know, nobody wants to do. But if they should have to move on from Derrick Henry, the younger version of him right there in Braylon Allen, who I think is going to have an outstanding combine. And you're talking about a guy that's 6'2", 245 from Wisconsin. He has the speed. He finishes runs. You know, you're coming from Wisconsin. So it's very clear that, you know, he's experienced with, you know, running behind high quality offensive linemen. So want to just kind of get into some of the draft options, you know, for the Titans. If they go running back, I mean, there's a bunch of them, but those are four or five that I think would be really good options. Glad we were able to bring you some of the talk that, you know, Callahan and Rand Carthon had here in Indy, and we'll continue to bring you coverage. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll be right back with Run TMC, and make sure you stay tuned for Jordan Reed and his take. And we got a couple draft picks too that will draft a prospect rather that we'll get to you. We got a Cedric Johnson, Ole Miss, outside linebacker / the end, Peyton Wilson. I got some a good quick conversation back and forth with him as well. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Nice skill. Where we going? And now, coming to you live, Miami, Florida. Started as shooting guard for your Miami Heat. Out of USC. Number 32. Arrow. Binder.
And now, sorry for the Denver Nuggets. Alex English.
Let me sing Amazing Grace, man.
Oh, my goodness, man. That dude had the craziest shot, man. But that joker would go in, man. I'm from Denver, Colorado, so I had to watch him when I grew up. So he's a dude.
I remember him, man. Yeah,
he's a dude. Nice, y'all kind of look alike, though.
Yeah, you know. I don't even know how to answer that one, but okay. Yeah, well, I grew up watching the Knicks and Sixers, and you know, you look like Trent Tucker. What's the difference?
Okay, you look like T.R. Dunn then. On the same team.
All right, you know, Orlando Woolwich looking fool.
You old Sam Cassell looking like.
Well, that brings it all home. It's Tyrone Hill.
Oh, you old Bo Outlaw looking. All right, okay.
George Litz, chill out.
What's going on, big dog? How's everything going, boss?
No, man, everything is good, man, over here at the Combine. I'm here in the hallways of the convention center, so you got to try to use the inside voice. So I'm kind of mixing that, you know, the excitement that we got to bring on the show. Cause you know.
Absolutely.
All right, well, let's do it this way because, sure. You know, obviously, you know, you have different positions that are going to be working out and doing things. So let's keep it in your area of expertise, specific, practical expertise, the wide receiver position.
Sure.
What drills do you feel showcase a receiver the most here at the Combine?
You know, I like the three-cone drill because the thing about it is when they do the three-cone drill or the L drill, you can call it what you want, but I want to see receivers change directions because if you look at this draft, there's a lot of guys that have a lot of speed. There's a lot of guys who can run straight, but I want to see if they can change directions. And the reason why I say if they can change directions is because if you look at the route tree, you got to start, you got to stop fast, and that's exactly what I see in these wide receivers, man.
Yeah, and when you look at the change of direction, right, because, all right, these drills, so much is focused on the 40-yard dash.
Right.
How much more significant is the change of direction than the ability to just run fast in a straight line.
See, here's the thing. There's a lot of guys who run 4.2, 4.3, but then when they get in the game, they play 4.6 and they cut it 4.6. If you look at Jerry Rice, when he ran a 4.6 or 4.7, he cut it 4.6 and 4.7, and he maintained the same speed. So it's not just about running a 40 time. Yeah, it helps, and it helps you make plays down the field, but at the end of the day, you got to start, stop, you got to change directions. And I'm going to give you a guy that does that very, very well. It's Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill is one of the fastest receivers I've ever seen, but he can change direction and continuously keep the same speed. So that's what I want to see if I'm, you know, looking at wide receivers. I know everybody can run a straight line. I know everybody can run a 40-yard dash, but at the end of the day, can you cut with the same speed? Can you change directions with the same speed? Can you burst off the cut at the same speed? Can you lie with your eyes at the same speed? And that's exactly what I'm going to evaluate.
Yeah, and that's the thing, the lying with your eyes, the ability to start and stop and change direction. That's how you get open, because it's not all about just simply running by guys and those types of things.
Yep.
But also another workout that they do, you know, is on the bench press. Do you, like, place any emphasis on that, or is it just something that's kind of like icing on the cake?
But see, the thing about it is there's a lot of guys that can bench press 225 like 56 times, but they're not football players. I mean, but I see some of the guys that can't even bench press 225 once, but be some of the most physical players. I'm going to give you a perfect example. Steve McNair. Steve McNair wasn't a strong guy in the weight room. He couldn't bench press 225 maybe once or twice. But when you're talking about a guy that's tough, a guy that's physical, a guy that can take a lot of punishment, that's kind of what I want to see. And I remember a guy who was funny playing wide receiver when I played with the Houston Oilers / Tennessee Titans was Hayward Jeffries. Hayward Jeffries couldn't even bench 135. He couldn't even do 245. But when he got in the game, he played physical and he made those type of catches. So I know guys are strong, guys are physical, guys can do those things. But at the end of the day, if you're bench pressing 225 45 times, but you can't change directions, you're just a guy to bench 225.
When you look at the gauntlet drill, you know, that's something that's pretty cool to watch. But does it kind of frustrate you that they don't, like, they're catching it and throwing it right down instead of catching it, looking into the tuck, you know, where you're supposed to?
It does, but the funny thing about it is those quarterbacks are trying to show off, too. They're trying to drill it. So, and they're trying to show the coaches that I can throw the ball fast also. So with that gauntlet drill, you really have to concentrate, and you really have to make sure that it's a rhythm thing. I mean, everybody in the draft that gets invited into the combine, they can catch the football. But you want to look at the guy, how's the rhythm? How does he change his hips? How can he catch the ball? Can he catch the ball with his eyes? Does he catch it with his hands? Does he catch it with his body? So, you know, even though it's frustrating that they catch it and don't tuck it, I want to see how they catch the ball. And I'm going to give you a perfect example. Look at A.J. Brown. When A.J. Brown would catch the football, it was quiet because it's like, whoop, it was like a baseball glove in a baseball. Then it's just nice and quiet. But if you have a wide receiver that's struggling and it's making all kind of noise, that means he's struggling and doesn't have a lot of confidence in catching the football.
Yeah, and I love that you say that because that's one thing. I remember with Michael Crabtree.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the where, like, they used to say he had vacuum cleaners for hands. And you could hear it just be like, it would catch, stop like that. So it's funny you mentioned that, because then you have a guy like, you know, not to beat Nick Westbrook or Kenny up, but I remember, like, when he first got to the Titans, that rookie camp, like, he and the ball, like, they were like Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield. Like, they were fighting. You know what I mean? You would hear thumps when he was trying to catch it. But then got better and better, and now it's, you know, it's quiet like that, too. So I it's dope that you mentioned that. Let me ask you this, though, because of the personality side of things, right? It's like all of the successful receivers, like, you look at your mindset, right? You know, it's aggressive. It's alpha. Like, I would never call you a beta. Like, I would never call Derek Mason a beta. You guys have alpha personality.
Yeah.
How much do you look at that, like, when you're watching these prospect interviews and the guys at the podium and things like that?
You know, if you look at being a wide receiver, sometimes you do have to have a little bit of selfishness in you, because you want to show that you can make plays. But I think that you want to do it in a compound of making a team better. When you talk about a receiver being a diva and this and that, I mean, you can say that all you want. When you become a diva, it means that you're complaining about the coaches. You're complaining about what's in the cafeteria. You're complaining about my shoes. You're complaining about all the things. That's a diva. But when you have a guy where his mindset is, I know that I can win on man-to-man coverage. I know I can be cover two. I know I can be cover three. I know I can catch the ball and make plays. It's not that you're being selfish. It's that you have this talent. And you have it's this wide receiver in you to say, you know what, I want to make some plays. Not I, but I want to make the play, but I want to make sure that it's in the compounds of doing it with the team. And that's how you got to handle the situation.
Yeah, and that's really big for me. You know, I like guys that, you know, want to get the opportunity. Like, they want the opportunity to help their team. And a lot of it does get mistaken for just, hey, I just want to show off. And that's not always the case. So I'm glad you know that. Are there any guys that you're looking forward to seeing work out? Any guys that you think are going to just, you know, watching them on film, you think they're going to, it's going to really transfer to the testing and stuff?
Yeah, I want to look at there's two positions I want to look. I know, you know, the Tennessee Titans are looking at the O-line. O-line, that's kind of boring. I don't know nothing about a drop step and, you know, pass throwing out. That's great. I want to see some exciting stuff. I want to see which wide receiver is going to be fast. I want to see which wide receivers are going to run the routes. I want to see which wide receivers can cut on a dime. Because if you look at in this draft, you know, it's rich in wide receivers. I mean, these are guys who are going to start jockeying for a position. So I want to see who's going to run fast. Absolutely. I want to see who's going to catch the football. Great. I want to see who change directions. And then also, I want to see these doggone running backs. They got some dogs.
Right.
Yep, I want to see who's going to be fast. And I think if Corum, you know, from Michigan, if he goes out a really good time, he may jockey for a position to maybe jump up in the earlier rounds.
Yeah. I think, you know, I don't think there'll be a running back taken in the first round, but
I think day two
is a good time when you start to see them go off the board.
Yeah.
Do you think Tajay Spears needs a thumper to compliment him, or what do you think?
Yeah, he does. I mean, you have to have a thumper back there, just like what you said. I mean, you know, Spears is a great athlete. I mean, he can run between the tackles. I mean, his change of direction is amazing. You can use him in so many different positions. But then now you get a running back that's a thumper. I'm not saying he's in the draft, but get somebody like Deontay Foreman, A.J. Dillon, or Gus Edwards and put him in a 20 personnel, 2 back, 0 tight ends, and 3 wide receivers, and he'll just make you better. Because now if they start keying on Spears, you know, one of those guys can complement A.J. Spears. So, you know, I definitely think they need to definitely get some running backs, a thumper, whoever they get in the draft or even free agent-wise, really compliment Spears.
Last thing real quick, because I know you got to get to your next, you know, you're a busy guy.
That's you, though.
No, but on the side, I wanted to ask you just about the cornerback position, the safety position also.
Yes.
How critical do you think it is for the Titans to have a very keen eye on these prospects here, you know, knowing that the depth that they have or lack thereof, especially at corner?
Yeah, because if you look at the NFL, if you look at the overall of looking at what's going on, it's a passing league, and you better have some corners that can cover. I mean, I know, you know, there's a couple of guys on the Tennessee Titans that are all right, but you got to start getting some shutdown corners that to where, you know, when you got you know, the defensive coordinator, Denard Wilson, that wants to blitz, you better have some corners that can cover. And some of the corners that in this draft are pretty good. I don't know if they're going to first round or late in the first round, but you got some guys like Nate Wiggins from Clemson. You got Cooper DeJean from Iowa. You got Teron Arnold from Alabama. You got my dude, Kool-Aid McKenzie from Alabama. And you got guys like that can cover. But at the end of the day, if you start blitzing and you keep that secondary, you know, a one-on-one, you better have some guys that can cover. You better have some guys that can be they can cover these wide receivers, because if you don't and you blitz, you're going to get your head beat in. It's going to be 7 on the scoreboard at all times.
Okay, I lied. I said last thing previously. This is how important for these guys, you know, you're going through the drills and stuff to compete against each other. Because you told me a story before. And I wanted to, you know, kind of listen to Yeah, like what goes on in between these drills.
Oh, hey, TD, it's competitive. And I'm going to give you a perfect example. We was at the combine. I'm walking in the elevator, and Westbrook from Colorado is, you know, I walk on my toes. My nickname is Tippy Toes, and he embarrassed me in front of everybody. He said, man, look how he walks on the toes. He walks silly. In the back of my mind, I said, I pray that me and him is in the same group. I didn't say a word because I ain't going to fight that dude. That dude is very big. I mean, he'll punch you in the snoot. So I said, I pray that dude is in my group because I'm going to crush him in every drill. So what happens is, you know, we get our number, whatever, and we get into our groups. Guess who's in my group? Westbrook. So I look at him, and I didn't say a word, and he looked at me. But in the back of my mind, I said, I'm about to crush you. So we get in a 40. I ran a faster 40 time to him. Then we go on to change the direction drills. He beat me in one of them, and then I beat him in the next one. And we were going at it. The reason why I got drafted third round and my name started to get bigger is because my mindset was, I'm going to do great in the combine, but also I want to beat Westbrook. And when that situation happened, it jockeyed me for position, and I started to stand out. Why? Because I wanted to beat Westbrook. And at the end of all the drills, this is a funny story, at the end of the drills, Westbrook walks up to me and he gives me a handshake. He said, "Man, you the real deal." So when he said that, I walked up. I said, "Yeah, I got him."
Crazy how that works, man. Really crazy. Well, listen, I appreciate you coming on. I tell you, man, it's funny. You know, I was watching a movie, and listen, I like to watch the old movies, and I'm laughing about it. I really had no idea that, you know, you even resembled this person. But, you know, I watched a couple movies, and the first one was, you know, Uptown Saturday Night. Oh. Let's Do It Again, and you know, Let's Do It Again was filmed in 1975.
Oh, my goodness.
Sitting with my girl, you know, and she's like, "I remember meeting Chris, but if he was old enough to be in these movies, man, I don't know what he." That's amazing. I said, "Whoa, whoa, what's up?" That guy you saw in both of those movies is not Chris Sanders. That's Sidney Poitier.
Well, guess what? I was my wife was watching. She was watching TV. Right? And she was like, "Baby, I just want to watch a concert." Or, you know, I just got done watching Usher at the Super Bowl. I just want to watch a concert. So as we're watching a concert on TV, she's like, "Baby, I did not know that TD could sing and dance like that." I said, "Baby, that's not TD. That's Ray Parker Jr."
Who you going to call?
Ghostbusters.
This is Will Levis, and I'm talking with TD.
Great talk with TD, man. Great conversation there with Chris Sanders on Run TMC. We're going to keep this thing rolling, man. As I promised you all, we were going to have a couple conversations I had with some prospects here at the Combine. Ole Miss, edge defender, Cedric Johnson. We'll have him, but I want to open this segment up with Peyton Wilson. He's a linebacker out of NC State that I really like, man. I got to see him down at the Senior Bowl. He bought out down there, and I just wanted to get his perspective on being a guy who is playing in space. You know, the NFL is a league where it's all about matchups and playing in space and being able to cover, and that's one of the things that David Long did really well, right? Playing in space and being a short tackler, and then also being able to get play to run. And so here's Peyton Wilson, NC State linebacker, on those two things. Check it out.
Like I said earlier, I think the linebacker position is changing. It's not as, you know, you don't have to be this 6'2", 250-pound A-gap linebacker, you know. I mean, you guys see Fred Warner, Logan Wilson, you know, they're amazing in pass coverage. Fred Warner just in the championship game going against Travis Kelce and doing an amazing job. You know, as a linebacker in today's league, you're asked to do a lot in the pass game. And, you know, just being able to be athletic and, like I said, understanding route concepts and the football IQ, I mean, I think it's so important. You know, I think that's something that I can bring to any team that wants to
And then in watching you, like, you have this mindset where it's like, regardless of size, like, you're going to throw yourself into whoever. Where does that develop from?
I mean, I think a lot of it comes from wrestling. I think a lot of it just comes, you know, I grew up on a farm, you know, a small town with 9,000 people. And, you know, whoever I meet in that hall, wherever I meet you, I want to prove that I'm the bigger man, I'm the stronger man. And, you know, if you beat me, I'm coming back 100 times. And, you know, we're going to go until I win. And, you know, that's just my mentality. You know, I want to be the best on the field. I want to be the best in the world. And, you know, that's something that my parents have instilled in me, that my coaches at NC State instilled in me. So, you know, I love this game so much.
So you heard it right there. You know, he talked about how, look, man, when he meets somebody in the hole, you know, he wants them to know that he's the bigger man, so to speak. And he's the man. Like he said, you know, if he gets his hands on you, he's going to bring you down. So, he's a guy I think will really match up with the Titans. Well, we have just more of an emphasis on the ability to play in space and cover, and he's an excellent linebacker from that perspective. Jalen Ford out of Texas is another one that I talked to about that. He's somebody as well, but we're going to stay on the defensive side of the ball, and we're going to talk with Ole Miss edge defender, Cedric Johnson, who was a standout at the Senior Bowl. I asked him, you know, about some of the tackles he went against, and I didn't get into the Tyler Guyton situation, but I will tell you this. They flipped him from him, meaning Tyler Guyton, from right tackle to left tackle. Like, they had him work from the left side a little bit. His first couple reps, man, Cedric Johnson, he did an awesome job there. So here's Cedric Johnson from the combine.
Just trying to take everything in, you know. Being from Mobile, it was a dope experience being back at home. So got to do that. Got to meet some of the coaches, take in some of their knowledge, and it was just dope playing against the best guys in college. You know, just a fun experience on those one-on-ones, and even in the game, it was just a dope experience.
I saw at times, you know, they were coaching you pretty hard.
Yes.
You know, Terrell Williams especially.
Yes.
How was that experience?
It was dope. He's a great coach. Just trying to soak in as much as I can, taking notes to the meeting room, just completely bought in, you know.
What was some of the feedback you got, you know, in the meetings and things like that? I know you met with a lot of teams.
Yes. You mean like in my interviews or in the meeting room? Like
both, actually. Yeah.
Feedback-wise, you know, just continuing to get better every day. Just like critiquing small things on the pass rush, what I can look at to help me go this way, or like run blocking, how I need to attack certain things, just small detail things like that to move, progress my game further.
Playing in the SEC obviously is no joke. Who were the best tackles, you know, that you faced?
Charles Cross, Evan Neal, and this past year I'd say Jason Clayton.
You mentioned Cross really fast. What stood out about your matchup with him?
That was my sophomore year also. I just seemed like I couldn't get nothing going. I'm not gonna lie. It's just I can't get nothing going this game. I'm like, this is a tough one. But yeah.
How do you fight through a game like that? So, you know, we all have them.
Just taking one play at a time. Just trying not trying to think too much about it. You know, had Sam Williams on the other side eating. So
yeah.
I'm like, as long as he getting in, as long as we come out with this dub, I'm good.
Have you talked to him since he's been in Dallas at all about this process?
A couple times over the past few years. Yeah, he's enjoying it. He's enjoying this process. My brother also told me this will probably be the longest year of my life, so I'm just settling in for that.
Nice.
So there it goes right there. You know, he said Coach T and the crew, they coached him hard, but he liked it. I ran into Coach Williams here, and, you know, it was good catching up with him. Looking forward to see how things go there. But, you know, another thing I like about the combine is just getting the opportunity to talk to these guys that may not be as popular as others, but really good players. So I really enjoyed that quick back and forth I was able to have with Cedric Johnson there. We're going to keep this moving. And
one of the things I always like is being able to catch up with guys who are smarter than me. So here's one right here, ESPN draft analyst Jordan Reed. Jordan, I want to start out with Will Levis and just the quarterback position. You played the position. You have a good understanding of it. What do you think the future is for Will Levis and the Titans?
Well, I think it's bright. And you saw some of those traits when he was coming out of Kentucky. And I know things didn't go as well as planned his last year, but his second to last year there, you saw the arm strength. You saw the accuracy. It was just the consistency. That was the big thing that everybody wanted to see from him. And it didn't happen that final year. And that was one of the biggest reasons why he was seen as a first-round guy coming into the year. He ends up slipping to the second round. But I think it helped him in the long run, especially when you're talking about those teams in the back end of the first round and some teams at the top of the second round. There may be some better situations for him. And, you know, Rand's done a good job of building it up, building that infrastructure. They still have some questions along the offensive line, but you see some of those targets being formed around them. Tajay Spears was a really good compliment for him last year. They developed some good chemistry. So I think the future is really bright for him, but it's just the consistency piece.
When you look at his film, right, and one of the things you see is the pocket awareness. Mm-hmm. It has to improve. How do you improve that? Is that something that you're just born with, or what's the deal there?
Just reps.
Yeah.
It comes with reps and just having a feel for the position. And I always compare playing quarterback in a new situation to you moving to a new city. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to use that GPS to know where the grocery store is and know where to get gas at. But once you live there, over time, you understand where the shortcuts are. You have a good feel for the city, where I need to go to get these certain areas of these necessities. So I think once he gets a better feel with those live in-game reps, it's only going to get better for him.
And we're talking to ESPN NFL draft analyst Jordan Reed. Jordan, moving on to the draft and just how things look at 7, it could be a Joe Alt Olufoshanu versus Malik Nabers, Roman Dunze. How do you look at that at 7, and how would you approach it?
Well, if I was Rand, I would want to get offensive tackle solidified, just because ever since the glory days of Taylor Lewan, that left tackle spot has really been a game of musical chairs. So I would want to get a plug-and-play guy, whether it's a Joe Alt or Olufashanu. I don't think they can go wrong with either one of those players, but offensive tackle definitely would be something that I would look at, just because with Will Levis, we want to make sure during that rookie contract we get the most out of him, and we want to set him up to succeed as much as possible. So just build up that protection, and that's where I would look to go at 7.
So if they go tackle at 7, coming back at 38, like the top of the second round, do you see A.D. Mitchell, Brian Thomas Jr., or is it more like Xavier Leggett, Xavier Worthy, that type?
Yeah, I think so. One of the Xaviers will probably be there. I think Brian Thomas will be gone. Keon Coleman may be there, depending on, I think a lot is dependent on the 40 and what time he runs. So he could be an option if he does end up running slow. But Xavier Leggett, Xavier Worthy, Ladd McConkey is another name that will probably be there. So I think those more so types, as opposed to a Brian Thomas or Keon Coleman.
And then what if we go to flip side? So looking at it, let's say they go Odunze at 7. Some of the tackles there at the top of the second. Is Jordan Morgan a guy that you think would be there, or Patrick Paul, or who are some of the?
Yeah, those are two names. It really just depends on where teams have Jordan Morgan, whether he's a guard or a tackle. That's going to be the big debate about him. If he's a guard, that's probably going to be more so teams that are comfortable with him somewhere in the second, just because offensive tackle, you're going to prioritize those guys late first, early second round. He's probably in the back end of that 7 or 8 guys that could go in the first round, but he could be there on day 2 as well. Patrick Paul, he's more so of a developmental project, so I don't know if Rand is going to want that, just because I think the Titans need those guys right away that they want along the offensive line. They don't need, you know, Jalen Duncan and Andre Dillard, these guys that are maybe a year or two away from being that countable, that dependable starter. I think they need guys right now that they can plug and play.
When you look at the fourth round, because we went through the first and second, they don't have a third round pick. You skip to the fourth round. Are there any corners that you think would be able to come in and start immediately there?
Yeah, there's two in that third or fourth round range. Cam Hart of Notre Dame is one that I'm a big fan of. I thought he was really good down at the Senior Bowl, and he actually was a wide receiver when he first got to Notre Dame. He flipped to the other side of the ball, and he's had some shoulder problems during his first 3 years, but last year he was finally able to stay healthy, and he had a breakout year. So some of that instinctual stuff, he's a really good tackler. He has really good ball skills too, just because he was a former wide receiver. So Cam Hart definitely is one, and the other is Kyrie Jackson of Oregon, another big corner that's very physical. He was actually at Alabama a couple of years ago and then transferred over to Oregon and had a breakout year. So those big, rangy corners is something that Rand seems to like based on, you know, free agency, some of the guys that he has targeted. So those big, physical corners that have ball skills, Kyrie Jackson and then Cam Hart are two guys that definitely fit the billing.
And then just to go back to the guys on the team, you watch a lot of Traylon Burks, obviously, at Arkansas. You see him now. Like, what do you see from then and now, and what are some areas you think you could get better?
It's just the consistency piece with Traylon. You know, the route running was a big question about him coming out of Arkansas, just because he wasn't able to show a whole bunch. They used him in so many different ways. He's running the jet sweeps, you know, the reverse handoffs, and then the fly routes down the field. That's really all they let him do. And you see the vertical ability with Traylon. I mean, he's had multiple games of where he's been able to get behind the defense, but just the durability aspect and just what branches of the route tree can he run? That's always going to be the big question about him. So I think what they have to figure out is how can you maximize his ability and just figure out what he can do and then just try to build around that.
In this world, like especially now, you know, a lot of times you see, okay, player X, here's a pro comp, you know, and A.J. Brown mistakenly was the comp for Burks all the time. And you saw what it did to him. Like it was unfair. But when you make those comps as far as like, hey, this player reminds me of so-and-so, how do you, like, I guess I could say, like, how do you keep it fair? Like yeah. Where are you, what perspective are you coming from?
So whenever I make player comps, I always say this. We're not comping him to his ceiling. We're talking about a playing style for a player. So we're not saying that Treylon Burks is going to be A.J. Brown and be a top five to top ten receiver in the league. We're just talking about a playing style, big physical receiver that you can't come down and press. He's very good with his hands, and then he can make what I call competitive catches all three levels of the field. So it's not more so a ceiling or what he can be. It's more so how he plays and how he wins.
Where are you on the – you look at Keon Coleman, and obviously, you know, people talk about the drops, but they always say, oh, well, he doesn't get separation. Yeah. He makes too many contested catches. Like, where are you on that?
Yeah, I mean, I like Keon. I thought he was phenomenal in the LSU game. He had three touchdowns in that game. He was really good during the first half of the year. He had some struggles down the backstretch of the year. And I know they lost Jordan Travis during the backstretch of the year, too. So we do have to take that into the equation. But, you know, Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson taught me a valuable lesson in that receivers – in order to obtain or get to that elite level, they have to make competitive catches and crowd a situation. So with Keon Coleman, and where you have to be careful when you get into the N'Keal Harrys and guys like that, just make sure that's not what they specialize in. You want it more so to be a part of their resume and not the top as far as their traits. So with Keon, I think that competitive aspect or competitive catch aspect is something that you get, but it's not the only thing or the top thing in this package.
Any guys just like pure speed, vertical guys that you could think of later on in the draft, like let's go day three. Any vertical guy?
Yeah, that's a good question. Now, there isn't a whole bunch of like guys that just get down the field, but there's a lot of quick guys that I like. Jaquan Jackson from Tulane is one that's a really good one. But an underrated receiver that I like is Marcus Roseme Jack-Saint from Georgia. I'm a big fan of him. He's very dependable. So there isn't a whole bunch of what I call speed merchants in this draft class, but there's a lot of quick guys or dependable guys in the late round.
And then last thing, when you watch smaller school guys, like non-Power 5, and then, like, let's say you're comparing them to, you know, a guy from Washington, wherever, what is it that allows you to, like, keep that on a level playing field as far as, like, you know, you watch SEC, like, an ex-receiver going against, you know, a guy that you know is going to play on Sunday, but then you watch somebody like Western Kentucky, like Malachi Corley or something like that?
Well, what I always do is first you see if they had any what I call up games. Did they play against these Power 5 schools, and how do they look? Were they able to get away with some of their athletic traits, or are they actually doing what I call translatable traits? Like Quinyon Mitchell is a great example of somebody that the traits are the traits. Like, he's athletic, he has really good speed, he's a wrap up and finish tackler, and then he's sticky in coverage. Those are the type of things that translate to the next level, as more so of just getting by off his athletic gifts, just because that's eventually going to catch up to him, just because everybody is just as good or if not a better athlete than you on the next level. So you have to figure out some certain traits that you like as a scout or whatever you feel is are translatable traits to the next level, and figure out, has this position consistently shown those traits to or is that attached to those upper level average or elite players? So you just have to figure out exactly what traits you feel like translate to the next level, and if that is going to help that player.
There you have it right there. Jordan Reed, ESPN NFL draft analyst. Make sure you check him out. Appreciate you.
No problem. Thanks as always, TD.
So that was Jordan Reed, man. Shout out Jordan Reed. Like, he when he did that interview, he was getting ready to go for 2.5 hours of radio. Like, we have Radio Row here, and all the teams have their radio and you know, sites set up there in the radio part of it. And he pretty much was going from team to team. And to be able to have that knowledge that he was able to drop, like what he just gave you all, he does that for on every team, man. So shout out to Jordan Reed and his ability to do that, to, you know, give that precise analysis there. Shout out to Chris Sanders for making it happen. Shout out to, you know, each of you for tuning in as well. David James making it work as well, man. Appreciate you. I know we're testing it, you know, this go round, right? Not being there in the studio. You are, but me not. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, appreciate you, man. Hey, we got it done. That's all that matters.
That's it right there. We got it done. And what matters is that we bring each of you a top rated product, something that we could stand on and be proud of, and something that you all will want to listen to. So I definitely shout out to everyone for tuning in. You can check us out anywhere you find your fine listening materials, man. iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, everywhere. Search Talking With TD, subscribe, rate, review. You already know. We appreciate you.